maybe sometimes with bees, some of us are just really, really passionate about them. There's something about the bees that almost calls us to them. And I definitely see that reflected in this book that we both read, Honeybee Democracy, because I can see parallels between what the author, Tom Seeley, and what I went through, this kind of something drawing us towards bees, learning more about them. It's what I love about bees is that it seems like the more I learn, the more I realize I don't know. It's sort of this never-ending rabbit hole of new and fascinating information.
This is Curious Planet, and I am Jacqueline Comito. If you're familiar with the Broadway hit musical Hamilton, you know that one of its popular songs is The Room Where It Happens. Maybe you even find yourself humming it from time to time. But in conservation work, I lean more into a quote that has been a guiding principle for me since I heard it nearly 40 years ago. Nothing important happens in a room. A field, maybe, or a river, or in the case of today's subject, a hive. But rarely a room. I don't remember who said it, but my interpretation of this line is that life becomes so much more expansive when one is outside. Ideas are bigger, the world feels bigger, more exciting, and filled with possibilities. Some of the best conversations I have ever had have happened outside. One of those great conversations happened recently when I spoke with Iowa State University bee extension specialist, Randall Cass. The first time I interviewed him, we were outside near his hives with the honeybees and cicadas as background music. The conversation was almost electric as we explored the central ideas in a book called Honeybee Democracy by Thomas Seeley. When I replayed the interview later, I realized that the recording device had also picked up the wind at times. I didn't like that, so I arranged to meet Randall again, this time inside our quiet streaming room on campus. We covered the same material, but it lacked the spark of the outside interview. So here's the first interview in its natural habitat, wind and all. You might be surprised how much honeybees can teach us about decision making. Enjoy. When you were presenting at the Water Rocks Teacher Summit, I was telling you about this podcast, and with great enthusiasm, you were like, oh man, you got to read Honeybee Democracy. What was it about the book that you were thinking, wow, that kind of fits your podcast?
What I found really interesting between Honeybee Democracy, about Honeybee Democracy, is how many comparisons you can draw between honeybee decision making and the way that we as humans and society make decisions. And I feel like it's a very interesting comparison, and there's a lot of very interesting parallels. And so I thought that by discussing this book, you would maybe be interested in exploring what we as humans and human society can learn about building consensus and decision making from honey.
Okay, so what's funny about this is you tell me to read the book, which I go off and do, and then I reach back out to you and say, okay, let's do the interview. And you're like, oh shoot, I better reread the book.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like books hit us at different times in our life upon multiple readings. And were there things about when you went back and reread it so you could do this interview with me that you were like, I maybe didn't see that the first time around, or something really struck me a little different, or I forgot what a great book that was?
A little bit of both. I knew that I loved this book, and rereading it was a great reminder. You know, I kept pausing and thinking, this is such a good book. But I think that one difference between reading it now compared to when I read it probably 10 years ago is considering the current political climate in the United States, considering what's been happening over the past 10 years, how politics in the United States has changed. I'm reading the book with fresh eyes and drawing new comparisons to what's currently happening in our democracy and what the bees are telling us.
Yeah, okay. So before we get to the conclusions, let's just talk about this a little bit. Honeybee democracy, what the heck? What the heck is that? And what are the honeybees deciding? And how did they decide it?
Right. The book goes into extreme detail about decision-making processes that happen inside of a honeybee colony. I think that it's important to note that a lot of people have misconceptions about the structure within or the hierarchy within a honeybee colony. I think people tend to presume that, well, there's a queen, right? So that queen has to be ruling over all the other bees and dictating what happens and what decisions are made. When really the decision-making is happening from the ground up, it's happening from bees at an individual level. We talked about this a little bit, but a lot of people place a lot of importance on the queen. When really the queen is just, she's an important part of the colony. A colony can't exist without the queen, but she's certainly not the one calling the shots or making the decisions. When in fact, what honeybee democracy looks into specifically is the individual decisions that are made by honeybees that assist bees in swarming. So a little bit about bee swarming. If people have ever seen a swarm of bees that's on a fence or dangling from a tree branch, the bees haven't chosen that spot, that fence, or that tree branch to be their new home. Actually, that swarm is in the process of making a decision about where they want their new home to be. Do you want me to continue?
Wait a second. I'm going to ask a philosophical question, or maybe it's not sure. Philosophical. Okay, so is it the swarm is singular?
Yes.
The bees are plural. How do they function? I mean, is it one organism or is it multiple organisms?
Right.
How should we be thinking about this?
The term commonly used to describe a swarm of bees or an entire colony of bees inside a hive is to refer to them as a superorganism. If I'm at an apiary site, one of my apiary sites, and let's say I have 20 hives there, each hive has 20,000, 40,000, 60,000 bees inside of it. But I'm not counting every bee individually. Each hive functions as a unit of livestock for me. So if I have 20 hives at a location, that's like having 20 cows on your ranch. So the bees inside the hive as a colony sort of function as a superorganism, as a single individual. They do this through communication, through pheromones. They do this in the case of decision making, through dance. One interesting tidbit that Tom Seeley points out is that your average swarm is about 10,000, 20,000 bees, and the weight of those bees is about the equivalent of the weight of a human brain. So you can think of a single swarm itself as an individual human brain making some decisions.
Yeah, so that's fascinating. So bees swarm as they need a new home, right?
Yes.
And what motivates, what is the thing that encourages bees that it's time to find a new home?
So bees will swarm in a couple of different circumstances. One of the most common reasons why they swarm is their population has grown too big for the space that their hive is currently in. So if they realize that they're running out of space, that they're filling up all their comb with honey and there's no cells in the comb left for the queen to lay eggs, they will create a new queen. And then once that new queen has emerged, they will, half of the hive and the old queen will swarm away to a fence post or a tree branch and then begin this decision-making process to find a new home, while the new queen and the other half of the colony will stay inside that hive. And this is how honeybees naturally reproduce in our ecosystem.
Yeah, so if I remember correctly from Seeley's book, there's actually multiple queens, but then one queen emerges as the one that gets to go with the part of them.
So usually the old queen, the brand new queen gets to stay at the current location, and the older queen will swarm away with the...
Okay, so how did they find that new location? And this is where the honeybee democracy, the democracy part of this comes in, right?
It's really fascinating. The swarm will land on a tree branch, on a fence post, and then over the course of a few hours or even a few days, get to work with decision making. So in that swarm, there's a handful of bees that used to be foragers inside the hive, and foragers tend to be older bees. So they switch their job from foraging to scouting. These scout bees will go off in different directions and scout out new locations. They're doing a little bit of almost house hunting. They're trying to find a location, a new potential home, a cavity that meets a lot of the ideal requirements that a honeybee colony would like. So in the case of honeybees, they're searching for a site that is large enough for the type of colony that they want. They're looking for a site that has a really small entrance rather than a really large entrance so that they can protect their new home easily. They're looking for sites that aren't really low to the ground usually. They're looking for something that's higher off the ground so that could protect them from potential predators. And they sort of have a list of these characteristics that they're searching for in their new site. And when you consider that, you can see why so many bees end up moving into the walls of someone's house, for example. Or I've even had people call me and say that they've had bees moved into, you know, an old car from the 1950s that's been parked on their property. So the scout bees go out and they search for sites that meet this criteria, these standards that they have for an ideal new home for the colony.
Okay, so first of all, I'm picturing them settling in an old 1950s car thinking, wow, this is really cool, retro. Hey, let's go check out this car.
Right.
But anyway, so once they find the site, so the scout bees are out there. They've all found like 20 scout bees or 12 scout bees. I forget what.
Yeah, it could be 20, 30 scout bees.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
quite a few.
They're out there. Each one of them found the site. They come back and do what?
They dance. So
who are they dancing for?
The honeybees are dancing for other scout bees. They're trying to make a case. They're trying to communicate several things. First, they're communicating through the waggle dance how far away this site is, what direction to go and find that site if the other scouts were interested in checking it out themselves. And then finally, the way that they dance or the vigor of their dance, how strong their movements are, add emphasis to how great they think the potential site would be.
Okay, like when I read this part, you know, you just start laughing because you can picture like breakdancing bees and, you know, breaking out their best dance move, depending on how excited they are about it. And you can tell that, you know, Professor Seeley took some great joy in watching these bees do their dance, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you seen this?
Yeah, definitely. I've collected quite a few swarms in my day, and off of tree branches, off of fence posts. And if you look at the swarm, on the outside of the swarm, you can see a handful of these scouts vigorously dancing, trying to communicate to other bees the quality of a site that they found. Can they communicate the specs of the site, for lack of a better term? How far away it is? What direction the bees should go to find it? And then other scouts, they'll follow the dance, and they'll go check out these other sites and come back. If they agree with the bee, if it's better than the dances, if that dance was better than other competing scouts, then they will start doing the same dance and try to convert others to go check out the site.
Do all the scout bees have to agree?
No. So in this way, it's very democratic. They're not necessarily reaching full consensus. But once the majority of the bees are dancing, doing the same dance about the same sites, that's when they've realized, all right, we can let all the other bees know that it's time to, we've picked a site, we've reached a majority. There's very little ego, which is something that I found really striking reading through it again this time. Sometimes bees will go out, they'll find a site that's just so-so. And when they come back to the swarm, their dance doesn't have a lot of vigor to it. It's as though they're house hunting. And, you know, they're looking at the houses on the market. They found a house that, yeah, they could live in. But they're open to change their mind if another bee comes back and has a much more vigorous dance.
Yeah, so it's more like, I found a spot. If we're desperate,
yes,
sure, let's go with this.
Exactly. Often if the colony is lucky, there will be one standout site that they're able to find, and most of the bees get converted. over to deciding to move to that site pretty quickly. The other female workers are crowding around the queen. The queen is giving off, her way to communicate is to give off queen pheromone. And that's what keeps the bees together. They follow the scent of their queen. They follow her pheromones. So the swarm is all balled around the queen, and that's where most of the workers are. And they're taking care of the queen, but they're also waiting. They're waiting for a decision to be made
and trusting,
by the scouts. And trusting,
right? The scouts. So the scouts have been given a job, and they're trusted to do that job because everybody's survival depends on it.
Yes. And that's another fascinating thing. And a difference between honeybees and humans with our decision making. If we're thinking about the honeybees as a super organism, they function as a single individual, which means that scouts aren't trying to convince others, you know, deceive others into choosing their site. They're willing to take the information that's given to them and go make decisions that will be best for the whole group based off of that. Because honeybees can't lie to each other. The honeybees are inherently honest. So the vigor of their dance, describing how great a new potential site is an honest, vigorous dance. And if the dance lacks vigor, that's the bees honestly communicating, you know, the site, it's not great, but it would do in a pinch.
That inability to lie, that is the reason why their democracy is so successful.
Yeah. A scout bee goes out. If they find a great site, they come back and they have a very vigorous dance. At the same time, the bees don't take this at face value, right? They're not going to move to a new site based on the suggestion of a single individual in the colony. Other scouts will follow the dance. They'll go visit that site to verify that it's there, and B, that it's as great as they said it was. And they'll fly back and join in that dance. And over time, if that is the best site, they'll build up that majority of the scouts and make a decision to.
Yeah, and they may work their way through a couple sites. Half of the scout bees go look at one,
yes.
The other half look at another one. So slowly getting down to the one perfect site.
Yeah, I think in the book it mentioned that there's different research studies have found that there's a different number of dances that are involved, which essentially would mean the number of different sites that the bees have visited. And I think that they usually placed it between 10 and 30 different dances that they see in a given swarm.
So bees are going to consider a lot of options,
yeah,
until they find the best one.
Yes.
Let's talk about the implications for humans and maybe a path toward better human decision-making on a small scale. One of the things that stood out to me, and I don't know, maybe it's just because I feel like we give, quote unquote, the leader too much authority and voice sometimes in our decision maker, rather than seeing them as a facilitator as opposed to driving the decision making, that minimizing the leader's influence on groups thinking was to one of the ideas that Seely offers at the end that jumped out to me, because I was like, yeah, sometimes I think the leader has to maybe remember your job is to get these ideas, let people air their opinions in honest ways, and then come to a group decision.
Exactly. So as we mentioned before, it's not the queen, it's not a single leader that's making the decision about where the swarm should move to. It's the swarm creates somewhat of a public arena for bees in this case, to share their different ideas and the different information that they have. And those individual scouts are the ones that come together and are able to present their ideas, have them verified, and then have the idea that would be best for the group be the decision that's made.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me that the scout bees tend to be the older bees in the group, so obviously been through a little life.
Yeah.
And have some experience and really truly understand what's going to make a good home for their survival. And so I think ideally that's also what we're trying to do when we organize committees and stuff is to, especially if they're elected officials, like in a faculty meeting, everybody's just there. So it's a different dynamic. But in the case of elected officials, like city officials, I mean, ideally you are getting the more experienced, maybe the more knowledgeable or different knowledge bases on one committee and going for it. So that's one thing bees show us, that it does help to be had a little experience under your belt.
Yeah, absolutely. These foragers, When a honeybee begins foraging behavior, that's usually once they're quite a bit older. They'll go through a series of different jobs before that, but foraging is one of the last ones that they have. So these bees in the swarm are relying on experienced bees, bees that have been, quote unquote, and literally out in the field. They have honed their vision, so they know how to seek out flowers to collect nectar and pollen, and they use that these skills that they've developed to seek out potential new nesting sites. And so it's fascinating to watch the bees rely on these experienced, you could almost say the elders of the group,
to
make these decisions.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but if you're a forager bee, you also proved your ability to get home safely.
Yeah, absolutely. If you've lived this long, that's got to say something, right?
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So that was one of the big things that stood out to me. If I remember from when we were talking earlier, what seemed to really stand out for you is those two things of the lying and the ego. So let's talk about that in terms of the bee's inability to lie and then humans' almost super ability to lie.
Right. As I was reading this, I kept on thinking about the human decision-making process and how much easier the decision-making process for humans would be if we had perfect information, right? So I mentioned kind of Google and algorithms, right? If I want to find information, let's say I want to Google what we're talking about right now. I want to Google information about honeybees, or I want to find the best place to buy this book, Honeybee Democracy. So I'll go into Google and I'll search Honeybee Democracy, Tom Seeley. They're going to give me a result, right? But it may not be the cheapest book necessarily. It's the first thing I can click on. It may not be the ideal place that will deliver it to me the fastest, because there's all these things happening behind the scenes that really motivate clicks. It's really motivated by clicks, and there's ways to kind of game that search engine system. And so I may not be presented with the best search results at the end of the day. Whereas with honeybees, they are visiting these sites, they're coming back, they're communicating honestly the quality of the site, the distance to the site. And so the other scout bees are presented with honest information, at least to that individual bee's perspective. They then, of course, are able to go and verify and then potentially be converted to think that that site is the best one and join in that dance. And so what I appreciate about the honeybees working as one super organism is they all have the entire colony's welfare in mind. Each bee is an individual, but the decision-making comes down to what's going to be best for the group.
The scouts that don't win the dance don't care.
And this decision is being made by the bee elders, this handful of scouts that go out in search. So in a way, the other 10 to 20,000 bees that are in that swarm are placing trust in those bees to make the right decision. Because once those scout bees reach a majority and just pick a site, the other bees will follow where they tell them to go.
Yeah, and so what's fascinating to me about that is I do think in human groups, smaller groups, so I always think when I read the book, I kept saying, yeah, this is democracy with small d on a small scale, is that, let's say it is a community of 10,000. They are actually trusting that the 10 to 20 people they put in charge of their city council and their mayor, they are trusting that they're going to make good decisions for the remaining people. It's when they fail to do that, that trust begins to break on that 10,000 and people start to make bad decisions. And if you think about it, if you put it in terms of the bees, if they go to a home that isn't suited, maybe it's not big enough or it's not going to protect them from, especially like in Iowa winters, they're dead.
Yeah, it's a life or death decision. Yeah.
So I think maybe you have ego and they can't lie. My opposite of lying would be this trust factor, is that how do we restore trust? And in some cases, it's in our hands. We just have to pick better leaders.
Yeah.
Better people to represent us. I think it's a better way to say people to represent us.
Yeah, and I think that not only in selecting leaders, but in general community decision-making, open to hearing and giving time and space to hearing about all the different perspectives, all the different ideas that are available, and then with full information, making decisions about what's going to be best for everyone.
Honeybees. Honeybee Democracy had me returning to the idea that there is another keeper of the past outside of humans, the natural world. In this case, honeybees are holders of a basic tenet of human social organization, democracy. I loved Randall's insight that the bees' success and survival depended on their ability to be honest. Could our ability to be dishonest eventually lead to human decline? When did humans first move toward deception? Was it when we first developed language? Or earlier, when our imagination was running wild? I also learned in this interview that bees share another characteristic with humans. They're only semi-domesticated.
Over time, you develop a relationship with the bees. And there are times where you know what's best for them. Maybe they've lost a queen and they're having trouble requeening, and you're using all the tools that are available to you to get them to requeen themselves, and they just won't do it. And so sometimes it can be frustrating that I mentioned that they're semi-domesticated, right? But they're still very independent. We don't control what they do. We don't control the decisions they make. They, as a super organism, do it. And man, sometimes it can get really frustrating because sometimes I think I know what's best for them and they are going to do the exact opposite of what I would like.
Oh, wow. And then what happens? They die?
Sometimes, right. But they're going to do what they want to do.